Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply. It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. Today's a special edition of the Pep Talk. This is the remedial Pep Talk. Remember when you did bad in school and you had to go back to a remedial class for math and relearn everything because what you thought you knew you didn't know? Well, we're going to talk about that today in the world of peptides. You know, the world of peptides is so new. Even for those of us who were dabbling with things like IGF-1, 12 years ago, 13 years ago, GHRP6. I mean, it's relatively new. Even growth hormone is relatively new because prior to recombinant technology, they were sucking growth hormone out of cadaver pituitaries. Like, I don't know that I wanted some dead guy's growth hormone in my body. And rightfully so, anytime something is so new, there's a lot of misinformation. Well, it's not because people don't know. It's because the information just isn't out there yet. But you always have people who want to put their flag in the sand that they're the expert. They know everything. They're going to write books about everything. When something is so new and we really are just scratching the surface, it's a big mistake. It's a big mistake. So we're going to answer some remedial questions today about peptides, about reconstituting them. Stability, shelf life, fidelity. You know, a lot of us put three or four different peptides in a single syringe. With a guy who knows, a guy who literally manufactures peptides. And that's Jean-Francois Tremblay in just a moment. Before we do that, of course, we have to thank our title sponsor who makes this show possible. And that is Legendary Foods with their amazing tasty pastry. SHRnetwork.biz/legendary. They have so many great flavors, cake style, chocolate cake, hot fudge sundae, cookies and cream, blueberry, strawberry, brown sugar, cinnamon. I know I'm missing one. Birthday cake. I mean, it's amazing. And every single flavor is better than the other. You will not be able to find the favorite, I predict. One will be your favorite for a while until you eat a different one. 20 grams of high-quality protein keeps you in your lane if you're looking for high-protein, low-carb because it's got less than 1 gram of sugar. And they taste delicious. You'll eat them because they're delicious, not because they fit into your dietary scheme. Again, shrnetwork.biz/legendary. Use the code SHR10 to save 10% off or listen during the commercial break. You'll hear a secret word hidden between two commercial spots. Email that secret word to onair@superhumanradio.net. Include your mailing address. We'll send you a free box. We're really backed up right now. Some of you are thinking, wow, I did that last month. I still don't have my free box. That's my fault. I just have my hands in too many things right now. But that will be changing very shortly. Be patient. You will get your free tasty pastry, I promise you. And now, without further delay, a guy who I've been meaning to have on the show for a very long time. We met at one of the peptide conferences. Jean-Francois Tremblay. How you doing, Jean?
I'm very good, and thank you for having me here. It's nice to see you again.
Yes, of course. So let's get right to it. Before I go through this list, I have to believe that you have some favorite, like where you go, oh, my God, these people just don't get it, that people say about peptides or certain peptides or something that makes you cringe every time you see this passed on again. I know I did one of them recently. You corrected me. I said about the malitol being, you know, the wafer, and you said, no, just weigh the peptide and see what it weighs. If it's 5 milligrams, then it's. But if it's 10 milligrams, there's something else in there. Let's talk about that for a second.
Listen, can you see that?
Yeah.
That's 10 milligram of C-max.
Yeah, it's nothing in there, right? Right.
See, because it's lyophilized, it's not a little ball. It's stuck on the walls. You look at it, you say, there's nothing. Well, no, this is it. No mannitol. Well, I think the most enduring misconception is the local effect of peptides. Mind you, a few have, like IGF-1 by itself, you know, not the LR3 or any of its variant, has a very local effect. If you inject it always at the same spot, you're going to have a hole. The fat will disappear in this right. area. But very rare. Most of them, they are systemic. And I have in mind BPC 157. You know, I collaborate with a lot of doctors. And yes, they have a local effect. If you go straight in the actual injury or...
Or the arterial, the arterial feeding the injury, right, right.
Yeah, or if by accident you hit that arterial that goes to that, but I really don't know by what means if you're close to, but yeah, if you go in, but you know, otherwise you have to, the peptide will have to cross so many tissues, fascias, muscles that are in between. It's going to be snatched by the blood circulation before it reaches. If it can reach, so that's still a big
misconception. So let's clarify this for those who are maybe not following. It's thought that if you have an injury and you're using, let's say, BPC 157 and mechano growth factors IGF-1EC, a lot of people, including me, when I tore my hamstrings, I didn't use an insulin syringe. I used a 1-inch. Syringe that is used for oil-based products, and I was putting the MGF, BPC 157, and something else, and growth hormone, literally right into the injured area. I knew I was hitting the muscle. I could feel it. I would push it in. But most people aren't doing that. You're just putting it under your skin. The blood vessels under your skin, they suck that right up, and it goes right into the main blood supply, and it's throughout your body in minutes. If you don't believe that, I was going to give an example. Anybody who uses peptides you can feel, oxytocin, GHRP 6 or 2, melanotan, you know that you give yourself an injection and in a couple seconds you feel it. Oh, I feel woozy. I feel nauseous. That's being delivered right to your brain. So if you're putting something here, or here because of an injury, and you feel it minutes later, it didn't stay there. It didn't stay there.
You could have put it better. So I think that's still that, and well, what we're going to talk about today, the stability of peptides.
I want to start with that. I get criticized all the time. I've done a series of do-it-yourself intranasal delivery to save people money. You know, you could take melanotan, you can take everything. Now, is every peptide worthy of intranasal? Probably not, because intranasal is going to bring it to your brain first and then the rest of your body.
If it crosses the blood-brain barrier, and if it crosses the membrane, basically. Yeah.
The membrane, right. The nasal membrane, right.
That's another thing. Some cross better than others, even if they're small. It's not only the size, it's the polarity. If the amino acid composition, is it hydrophobic or hydrophile? Same thing for sublingual. That all those factors will make different absorption rates. So they may have a similar molecular weight, but one will be absorbed and the other not, because one is hydrophile and the other one is not. Or, you know, there is many factors. In the case of C-Max and C-Line, they're both absorbs not that great. But the reason you get more effect, actually, when you go intranasal with those two, and they did research on that, they tagged them with isotopes and everything, is that they degrade so fast in your bloodstream that by the time it gets to your brain or it reaches your brain, a lot will have been degraded.
Right.
If you do intranasal, a percentage will cross, but it's still better than injecting.
Right.
So those two, they're actually better to take intranasal.
And I love intranasal melanotan too, because I don't get nauseous, but I do get tan. It takes a little longer. It takes a little bit longer.
Of course, because it's not all absorbed. It all comes down like BPC or wall. It's good. But there is a financial factor. When you know, they're not that expensive, but they're not cheap. You want to get the most out of it,
right.
So when you take orally, you absorb around 50%. So that means it's going to cost you twice to get the same effect.
Right.
Can you afford it or not?
Right.
So if you can afford it and you don't want to shoot yourself, then yeah, go for the pills. It's going to work great. But there is that factor that has to be considered. It's not better in terms of effect. It's better in terms of finances.
So let's talk about fragility for a second. So back in the day when I first started using growth hormone, I was told, oh, it's very fragile, 191 amino acids. And when you reconstitute it, you have to let the diluent run down the side of the vial and just gently, and then you can't shake it. You have to just swirl it. And I just assumed that that is accurate, that it was very delicate. But now, nowadays, where I'm have people telling me BPC is very delicate. Oh, you put the water in too fast. And I have to believe that not all peptides are delicate, and the amino acid bonds play a role in that. So talk about the amino acid bonds and how they hold the amino acid together.
Let's talk about two well-known polypeptides, but still peptides that are kind of fragile, insulin and growth hormone. And that's where it comes from, you know. Back in the 90s, bodybuilders, athletes, they were using them. And yes, they're kind of fragile. You know, you cannot like just. But again, I'll explain something to you. Some people there, they're going to freak out, but it's going to put things in perspective. Growth hormone is a long string of amino acid that folds upon itself. And that folding is held by weak bonds, you know, that between one part of the chain to the other. Same thing, actually, insulin, it's two chains of amino acid that is held by three bonds. So those bonds are kind of weak. So if you would shake it too much, you may break them. But again, not all of them at once. It's like the, you know, for a while when I wasn't sure about the stability of some peptides, I would tell people, well, just preload syringes for individual doses and refreeze them.
Right.
And then people, they say, yeah, but it's not good. Yeah, there is that thing. It's called the freeze-thaw cycle that eventually you degrade the peptide.
Right.
I mean, you have to do it like over 100 times to start to see the gradation.
Right. Right.
If you do it once, you won't see a difference. It's the same thing for that. You would need to shake the growth hormone or the insulin a lot and often to break it all down.
Right.
It's not, you shake it a bit and bang, it's totally useless. It's not like that. So that kind of myth came from those. People assume, okay, those are peptides, so that applies to all peptides. Well, it turns out it doesn't. And we made some tests, stability tests on two peptides that were believed to be very unstable, thymazine alpha 1 and MUTC. MUTC, it was, I really don't know where they got that. Not from research, because they wouldn't have said it. That it had to be used within 4 hours. Otherwise, it'd be useless. Well, we did stability test, and the stability test involved to reconstitute the vial, put it in the fridge, take it out of the fridge for 5 minutes, and put it back in the fridge every day. What would be a normal kind of
use? Yeah, that's how you would use it. Yeah, yeah.
Thymazine alpha 1, MUTC after 3 weeks, they lost like not even, or maybe let's say around 1%. So they went from 99.3 to 98.6 or something. I don't know.
That's negligible. That's negligible.
And those two were the classic unstable pitbulls.
Right, right.
The thing is, when you look on paper too, Mutsi on paper look unstable. When we made it first, when we saw it on paper, we thought, oh, this one will be unstable because of some bounds and everything. But then after we made it, we say, ah, it's more stable than we thought. Then much later, we did the actual test. And time is in Alpha One. I really don't know why they say it's unstable. Well, it comes from the company. Companies, they say that. It's called good practice. Like we tell people.
Best practices. Peptides, yeah.
Keep them in the freezer. Once reconstituted, keep them in the fridge. That's good practice. But let's say you forget your vial on the counter for a day. It's not milk. You know, it's not, it's going to be all bad.
Think about something here for a second. These peptides that are found endogenously, naturally occurring in our bodies,
at higher temperature,
at almost 100 degrees, at 100 degrees, and they stay fidelity, they stay intact.
And that's what brings me, if I can open a parenthesis, a question that is asked sometimes, and there are doctors saying that you cannot mix peptides when you inject them. And I'm not even talking in the vial. I'm talking in the syringe.
Syringe, right.
And that's... when we tested that in the vial. We mixed CGC-1295 with the Primorlin, reconstitute, and did the same stability test after 3 weeks. So we tested the stability, and at the same time, we look if a new peak would come out, maybe a hybrid peptide.
Right.
Or weird degradation.
Right.
Nothing happened. So that was much longer than in the syringe for a few seconds.
So that's one of the things
that's a myth.
In the body,
you have more than 7,000 and more, probably hundreds of
in your blood.
Going around all the time at higher temperature and they don't interact.
So that was one of the things that made me say maybe the experts don't really know what they're talking about, because the idea that you can't mix peptides in the same syringe, but yet they seem to exist in your bloodstream and no one is sharing, oh, this is going to become that peptide now because that bond is going to break and that's going to go over there. However, I will say this, and I'm going to add, this is a question more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I have a post-workout peptide stack that I use religiously. It's 2 IUs of growth hormone. It's 300 micrograms of mechanogrowth factor, 500 micrograms of BPC-157, 500 micrograms of thymosin beta-4, 100 IUs of oxytocin, 100 micrograms of modified growth factor 1 through 29, and 100 micrograms of GHRP-6. I always add the What's that? That all? I got to get a longer syringe. So I always put the mechanogrowth factor in last. And here's why.
No, I know. Yeah.
It gets cloudy. For some reason, when I pulled the mechanogrowth, and I'm using all the same diluents for everything. When I pulled the mechanogrowth factor in, it looks like little clouds, little puffy clouds form. And they just hang there, like in suspended animation. So I figure I put it in last and then shoot it real quick before, because it's got to be doing something. So what do you think it's doing?
You should actually first, I think you should inject the mechanical growth factor.
By itself
about half an hour after all the growth hormone things.
Okay.
Because if you inject it at the same time, then your own body, because it's there already because you injected it. Okay, now you take the growth hormone after the training. You get your own burst of growth hormone.
During the training,
then,
right.
Yeah, then you add up to that burst.
That's what I do, yeah.
So by taking the MGF right then with the growth hormone, then you won't get that burst of your own MGF, which occur after, about half an hour after.
So I should time that to be something I do at least an hour after everything else.
But, half an hour is good.
Okay.
Yeah.
But why do you think the mechanical growth factor gets cloudy? And talk about bonds. Are bonds electrically charged?
Yes and no. They're charged before they hook up. It's those charges that makes them
attract bond. The amino acids to connect, right?
But at the end, many times you have a total charge. It could be minus one, minus two, plus one, plus two of the total peptide. And that's why that affects absorption in terms of if you go sublingual or intranasal. If the total peptide, is it hydrophobe or hydrophile, that will affect will it be absorbed under the tongue, for example, or even if you swallow them. You know, we know that small peptides are absorbed, but right. Some are more absorbed than others because of those factors. But that cloud, it's probably, that's a big mix, but it's probably to the concentration. At one point, the total concentration of the solution is higher because you have a bunch of other peptides. Mm-hmm. So it kind of kicks it out. Or maybe it's not even the MGF that gets cloudy. It could be
You might be right. It might be something else that's changed.
It's just being kicked out of dilution. Which is nothing. Once you inject, then it's going to dissolve in the blood. But I've seen that sometimes. It's just that to that high concentration that you provoke, one of them was at the limit, so you kick it out of dilution.
So let's talk about concentration and solvency for a second. So everybody reconstitutes their peptides based on what they've been told. But because I put so much stuff in one syringe, I tend to reconstitute with less. For instance, a 5 milligram vial of BPC, I'll put 1 milliliter only. Mm-hmm. So that every tenth of a milliliter is a half a milligram. But I've been told, no, you got to put more because if I can't see it, if it dissolves, and I don't mean really dissolve, where, you know, sometimes it dissolves, but if you look in the light, you see the crystals kind of making this wavy. That to me, that's not completely dissolved. And maybe if it sits overnight, it will. But if I can't see any evidence of the original peptide, isn't the solvency fine? Isn't that concentration adequate? Or do I need to put a lot more liquid in there?
Even if it was not all dissolved, and we see that with the ARA-290.
Mm-hmm.
That we need to put a buffer in it to kind of get a decent dissolution, and it doesn't. It becomes kind of, it's a bit cloudy. It's mm-hmm. kind of a suspension.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it goes through the needle.
Yeah, and it goes into your skin.
You're good, because in the body, again, when it reaches the bloodstream, it will dissolve in the blood and go do what it does. So it's really not a factor. And because they're all basically water soluble, all those concepts of delay, like you would have with oral testosterone in oral, that's totally different. Concentration makes a difference.
Right, because it makes a depot. It makes a deposit under the skin that's slow
releasing.
One
big factor of the release of testosterone is the concentration gradient.
Right.
And people based all their half-life on the company's results and study results, but that were done with specific concentration. So, and that, you know, which is 100 milligram per ml or even 50 milligram per ml for a decade and all that. Mm-hmm. So now if you put 300 milligram per ml, once the depot is there, the concentration gradient is much higher. So the compound will go out a lot faster. So you won't get the same curve at all.
Right.
So that's a little mistake people do when they look at half-life and curves.
What about peptide storage? So how long will a peptide stay in a conventional freezer if it's not reconstituted, it's still in its lyophilized form. You put it in the freezer. How long will it stay in there in a conventional freezer?
Oh, a few years for good.
Easily, yeah. Yeah.
We then tested it because it would be years of studies. Well, of maybe we'll start one study on that just to be sure. But you would lose, and even after a few years, you would lose a small, very small percentage of the peptide. And I would say 3 years, no problem. That even if there is a small degradation, clinically, you wouldn't notice the difference. That's the main point.
Right.
And that people don't see that. And if you look at a lot of studies on peptides, many times, like MUT-C, for example, all the studies that I've seen, it was done with the peptide at 95%, not 99.9 or anything.
Right.
And they showed all those results. So if you start with a peptide at 99.2% and it does degrade to 97, well, clinically it's still going to do exactly the same thing. And if it was in the freezer, we're talking years in the freezers to lose 2-3 points like that.
Go.
Even at room temperature, they don't degrade that fast. If they're kept in the dark. And I think the temperature, the threshold where they might start to degrade faster, it's like 42 degrees Celsius.
What is that in Fahrenheit? That's like 120?
Yeah, it's hot. Yeah. It's like Florida at the end of June.
Yeah, and everything goes bad. Everything goes bad at that
eventually.
Temperature.
But no, they at least the ones we work with that everybody knows, and even the weird ones, they're very, very stable, amazingly stable, actually. After those studies we made, if the two most unstable we talked are amazingly stable, then, you know, the other ones more. The reason companies say that, again, it's for good practice. You know, they cannot tell you, oh, no, they're stable. They know people. You know, it's not everybody. They say, oh, it's stable, so they would leave it in the counter, in the sunlight,
right.
UV, that could degrade. So they say, no, give the best conditions, knowing that people will diverge from that.
Right.
It's still going to work. What I don't understand is why they say to throw it away. If it's not used,
I want to. When we come back from this break, I want to talk about once they're reconstituted, because this is where the real amazing story begins. There are so many peptides that I left in my refrigerator that I reconstituted the year before, and thought, well, this is a peptide I'll feel. Melanotan 2 is famous because it's 10 milligrams. You know, you take such small doses, so a lot of people are under the misconception that once you reconstitute a peptide, it's going to go bad very fast. We're going to talk about that on the other side of the break. In the meantime, Jean-Francois Tremblay's website is canlabsciences.com. CanlabSciences.com. You'll find a lot of amazing peptides you probably won't find at any other peptide supplier there. So check it out. We're going to take one commercial break. We'll be right back with more. Stay tuned. Being superhuman means being conscientious about the choices we make. White Oak Pastures is superhuman when it comes to raising livestock. They're committed to animal welfare, land regeneration, and rural revival. They responsibly manage the entire process from the pasture to your doorstep. High-quality, pasture-raised, great-tasting meat from a farm you can trust. Full nose-to-tail selections. They even have options for your pet. Go to shrnetwork.biz/whiteoak and use code SHR20 to save 20% off your your entire first order. Is there something interfering with your happiness or ability to achieve your goals? BetterHelp can help. They will assess your needs and match you with a licensed therapist. This is not a self-help or crisis line. It's professional counseling done securely online. They have a broad range of experts and are available worldwide without having to wait in an uncomfortable waiting room. Get the help you need and start living a happier life today. Go to shrnetwork.biz/betterhelp. That's better, H-E-L-P, and receive 10% off your first month of counseling when you use the code SHR. Peptide. Attention meat lovers. I've discovered a snack with just two ingredients, meat and salt. That is so tender and delicious, you almost can't believe it. That's right, no soy, sugar, or other crap. Our partner, Carnivore Snacks, nailed it with these mouth-watering snacks. They have a variety, too. Ribeye, pork loin, leg of lamb, and more, all sourced here in the USA from regenerative farms. Claim your superhuman offer from Carnivore Snacks today at shrnetwork.biz/snacks. That's S-N-A-X. Use the code SUPERHUMAN for 15% off your first order, plus a free 2-ounce pork loin.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
If there is one mineral you should be worried about not getting enough of, it's magnesium. Magnesium is the body's master mineral, powering over 300 critical reactions, including detoxification, fat metabolism, energy, and even digestion is influenced by the presence of magnesium. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about a new magnesium product I've been taking now called Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the ultimate magnesium supplement, easily the best I've ever seen or experienced. With all seven forms of magnesium, I was able to arrange an amazing deal for my audience, and I guarantee it's the best deal available on this product. Seriously, with volume discounts combined with our custom 10% coupon code SHR10, you can save up to 40% off select packages of Magnesium Breakthrough. And I promise that this deal is only available on this specific website, magbreakthrough.com/SHR. You won't find that deal on Amazon or even on the company's own website. Go to magbreakthrough.com/SHR and use code SHR10 to save up to 40% off select packages of Magnesium Breakthrough.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back. Oh, my green screen. I'll tell you something. I'm tired of this. It's so finicky. If I move, it just disappears. Otherwise, I disappear. It makes me look like a ghost. Here, let's get this someplace where it works. There we go. Okay, so we're talking with Jean-Francois Tremblay. He is with CanLab in Canada, and that is canlabsciences.com. You can go there and learn a lot about different peptides. So this is one that surprised me. I have been using peptides for close to 16 years now. And I always thought that once you reconstituted them and put them in the refrigerator, you had a certain amount of time to use them, or they were going to degrade or go bad or whatever terminology you want to use. I was surprised probably about 7 years ago, I found a 10-milligram vial of Melanotan 2 that I had forgotten that I reconstituted, and it went someplace to the back of the butter dish. I know we all keep our peptides in our butter dish. Nobody keeps butter in the butter dish anymore, not, at least not in this audience. And so I found it and I thought, So I pulled a small amount out, but more than I normally would inject because I believed it was going to be ineffective. It was probably a couple years old, easily. I injected it. Within minutes, I started getting red and flush. I started feeling that nauseous feeling, and I thought, oh, my God, this feels just as good as when I first reconstituted. That's when I started saying to myself, I wonder, once these peptides are reconstituted, if they really go bad that fast in the refrigerator.
Well, to say bad is a wrong word because they're not proteins. Milk goes bad. Like, it's good, poof, it's bad.
Right.
It tastes bad, can make you sick and everything. peptide that will just degrade. That means a small percentage will break down. So what will you will have is after a few weeks, maybe a fraction of a percent of floating around smaller peptides that, you know, are broken down from the main one.
Right.
That are inactive, or maybe by chance, like melanotan, you have the last three amino acid, which is KPV. Then maybe some of it will have KPV now in it, but it's too small. You won't see the effect, but nothing bad will happen. It's just not being ineffective. But it's known clinically when something is efficient up to 80%, clinically is great.
Right.
So even if it was to degrade to 80%, it would still very good, as you said, maybe take a bit more. But clinically, you wouldn't notice the difference. You know, it's, you would get the same results. But it doesn't go down to 80%. I would say it's still in the 90s. I wrote a little article on purity of peptides and what you have to worry about. It's not like 97%, 98%. You get a BPC from a bad place, so to say,
and it starts out at 50%.
But even no, we tested both at 99%, for example, percentage. But what you have to worry about is that 1%. Okay, let me give you an example. The FDA a few years ago sent a warning out that they seized the PNC27, which is an anti-cancer peptide, mm-hmm. and they found bacteria in the peptide. So I found that kind of bacteria is related to the water that was used that wasn't clean. Mm. It's specific to, you know, a not clean lab. So what does it tell me from that lab? You know, I won't name the country, but I'm sure everybody knows, is that they didn't use ultra-filtered water to work. They just tap water, I guess.
Now, was this was this during the lyophilization phase that they used this crappy water, or the reconstitution phase?
During the making of.
Okay, so the lyophilization, right.
And not the lyophilization, maybe for the lyophilization too. But what tells me too is the last step of preparing the vials for lyophilizations is just before we fill the little vials, which have been autoclaved and we work under huts and all that, is that we filter everything through a 22 micron filter. Mm-hmm. So no bacteria, nothing floating around, it's clean. Even though all the steps before that ensured purity. So if the bacteria ended up in the final vial and shipped like that, that means they didn't filter their thing. So two very important steps were not done. Well, first one, it's ridiculous. You know, I don't see all the bacteria because that's specific. I'll send you, or you can find it. You're in the same groups where I wrote that thing. To be there, it's ridiculous. So basically, what was the topic we started?
Oh, we were talking about the reconstitution and shelf life.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah, okay. So coming back to that, so they're very stable.
But let me ask you a question on this topic. So. Back in about 2008, 2009, there was a study published that black market growth hormone. Mm-hmm. The term they used in the study was aggregate. What they were talking about was not the 95% growth hormone, but the 5% of whatever. And we're not even talking about impurities now. I know that for a fact that there were some cancer-causing agents found in some peptides from China a few years ago, and it was like an industrial solvent, shouldn't have been in there, but it was in there. Mm. Okay, but what I'm talking about is when the amino acid sequencers or even the E. coli that they're using to make these peptides, makes successfully this peptide. But like you said, 99%, 95%. The 5% that didn't hit the target is aggregate. And these are just random peptides bonded in certain sequences that mean nothing. They're fragments and whatever. The study indicated that this aggregate caused people to have allergic reactions. Mm-hmm. And that the allergic reaction, the immune system ended up going after their own growth hormone. The growth hormone their body was making was foreign to them because this aggregate combined with this growth hormone that they were injecting turned on the immune system, and the immune system said, that's the enemy. Well, now when their pituitary makes growth hormone, their immune systems go, I mean, that's the enemy. Have you ever heard of this, and do you think that's a concern with the widespread use of peptides today?
Not with peptides. If they're well made, the only thing you'll find floating around are free amino acids.
Yeah, and that's not gonna. That's no big deal.
You know, and again, the way the BPC, thymazine beta 4, alpha 1, even if they in their degradation kind of break down in smaller fractions, I don't see those. They will be too small because for the body to react, you still need a big fraction, you know.
A large amount.
And growth hormone, not large amount, but big molecules. So, yes, from growth hormone, let's say you cut it in half, maybe one fraction will, because it's a bit complex, but depending where it cuts off, and there I'm theorizing, you know, you somehow make that section where it cut off more open, so more the antibodies sees it better,
right?
So bang, you get that autoimmune response,
right?
But I don't see that happening.
Okay
with those smaller peptides. And the funny thing is, you know, that even if the body reacts, the compound still works.
Yeah, right. I know. Okay, so Scott,
so it doesn't make it ineffective.
Scott Lawler has a good question because we were just about to move on to diluents. So Scott says, Gene, I make my own bacteriostatic water with ASTM type 2 deionized water to help ensure stability. Boiled and benzyl alcohol added. Micron filtered, of course. Could you confirm it should help stability over, say, a regular bacteriostatic water that you buy off the shelf?
Well, stability is there in both cases. You know what? Why they put
benzyl
expiration date on those bacteriostatic bottles?
Let me guess. So they keep selling it because it never goes bad.
It's because they come in plastic vials. It's actually for the plastic. They figure that after a certain time, the BPA, BPC, and, you know, the BP, they go up to Z. They don't talk about it. The concentration would get too high.
Interesting.
No, water, alcohol, that doesn't go bad.
Right.
Ever. It's actually the container. So that's why there is an expiration date. You should respect it if it's in a plastic vial. Otherwise, no, what you wrote there, that's great. You know, he boiled the whole thing, so everything is dead. If there is something alive, then he filters it. If you up to making it, it's great. Yeah.
So back in the day when I first started using IGF-1, this was before the LR3 version. It was just IGF-1. And we were told it had a very, very short stability life. And you had to reconstitute it with acetic acid, which is vinegar. So they used to have, sterile vinegar, but they called it sterile acetic acid for injection. And you would reconstitute the peptide with this. Acetic acid won't freeze. So you could put it in the freezer, and that's where they told you to keep it, not in the refrigerator. Mm. But injecting it hurt like a stinker. I mean, you're injecting acid into your skin, you know.
Usually it's 0.6%. that you need. And it's basically to change the pH to make it dissolve. That's all. You see that with AOD 9604. Mm-hmm. If you use normal bacteriostatic water, you will have that cloudy thing.
Suspension. Becomes a suspension, right?
Yeah, which is not a problem, as I explained before. But if you were to add a bit, like 0.6% of the acetic acid, then bang, because the pH is lowered, it's more soluble because of the polarity of the molecule, amongst other things, and bang, it's that's the reason.
So that's
why they use acetic acid. It doesn't make the compound work better or not.
Right.
It's just a dilution.
So what do you think about, so there's the common choices are bacteriostatic water, sodium chloride for bacteriostatic water, sterile water for injection, and of course acetic acid. No one's going to use acetic acid. Is there a reason that sodium chloride, because it's saline, is a better choice than, say, just plain?
No, not really. The saline, that's because it's homeostatic with the blood. So it would be used if you would do an IV with that. But you when you do sub-Q or intramuscular, the quantity is so small, you won't disturb the homeostasis of when it reaches the bloodstream. So, but those with sodium chloride, it's to adjust with the homeostasis of the blood, you know, the concentration of salt. It's a bit pointless. One or the other, which one you can get your hand on, they're both good. Now, about sterile water for injection, I would be more careful in its manipulation because it's not bacteriostatic. So, you know, make sure, extra sure you wipe with alcohol and all that. And even with bacteriostatic water, because, you know, it's bacteriostatic water. It's not bacterial killing
right.
water. The alcohol.
It's not a bacteria. It's not a bactericide. It's not a bactericide.
Exactly.
It's not going to kill.
It doesn't kill the bacteria. It just stop it grow. It's growth. So if you inject it, then it's going to kind of spread. And if there were bacteria in there, because of bad manipulation, then it's going to start to grow again. So you still need to be careful. It's not going to kill bacteria if, let's say, you didn't use a clean syringe. That was, you need still to be very careful.
So I buy exclusively sodium chloride bacteriostatic water because way, way back, I may have been given some bad information. That's why we're here to clear this up. Mm-hmm. I was told that the pH is better for the peptides and it keeps them stable longer. Any truth to that, you think?
No, it's more in terms of dissolution mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. than anything else. Again, maybe for some peptides, but not those we're working with. In terms of stability, we can go to the other extreme. I saw a case in the lab where they were experimenting. It was more a proof of concept. So never meant to, but to see if it worked as a raw thing, where if they would extract the peptide from the filtration column and cross the room to inject it to the mice, almost all the peptide will be degraded. It wouldn't work. So they had to bring the cages of the rat next to the column and inject it right away so they could see some kind of effect.
But that's rare. That's rare.
That's rare. That's like experimental stuff with weird peptides, with weird configurations. You know, all that talk we have, it's with all those peptides that we know about in general.
Yeah, we don't. So Scott Lawless says he's heard that phosphate-buffered saline for certain peptides like thymosin alpha 1 and ARA 290, not too
this,
sure of the reason.
The solution, like the ARA 290, comes with the buffer we lyophilize it
mm-hmm.
with the buffer. So the zinc phosphate is mixed with the peptides or when you, you reconstitute. And that's to change the pH. Because ARA 290 in water, it's like 1 milligram per ml dissolution. When you use a good buffer, then you can bring it up to 4 milligram about, and it's still cloudy, but proper for use.
Explain lyophilization for people. I mean, I was surprised when I heard what lyophilization was, because when I was a kid, cornflakes came out with freeze-dried strawberries, and it was so good. Yeah. And then when you added the milk, they puffed up and they got they tasted like fresh strawberries. Really, that's what lyophilization is, right? It's freeze-dried.
Yeah, it is. Basically, there is that thing happening in physics. Let's say you freeze water and you lower the pressure inside. That lower pressure will pull the molecule of water, but because it's under low pressure, it will go from solid to vapor without going back through
liquid
phase. Right. So that's what it is. You go from solid to vapor. So you extract the water like that, and you remain with that little whatever was there. When it's bulky, or you get that little cake, or you get like... But you saw that those strawberries, they were the same size and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I loved them. They were crisp, you know, they were dry, they were light. But then once the milk got to them and the moisture got to them...
But if you break it, you find it's very... It's empty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like it's over 90% water. You took it out.
Yeah.
Weight-wise, it weighed a lot less. So basically, this is it. So it's a process. Why we do it? There are two reasons why we lyophilize peptides. The first one, it's for accuracy. Because there's even... Some people, they do that, you know, they just, they have their little scale and they weigh 10 milligrams and put it in the vial. So you have variations. When you lyophilize, you take, let's say, 500 ml, put that many milligrams of peptides in that water. Oh, about little parenthesis. We do that with all our peptides. Before lyophilization, when we do that, we put the peptide in the water. And as I explained before, we put only half a ml of water per vial, because when we freeze it, it's at minus 40, which is the same in Fahrenheit or Celsius. If there is too much water, the vial will
crack. Sure.
So we work with half a ml. So the limit of what we can put in a vial is what we can dissolve in half a ml. And sometimes, like time is an alpha one, we really have to push it. But we do it for all the peptides. We put it in a hydrosonic bath. That, at the microscopic level, shakes the molecule like thousands of times per second.
Right.
And when they come out of there, because we test them after the final process, they're intact. So that kind of blew out
the delicacy
of the peptide.
And think about it, they do that with growth hormone. Think about this.
They do that when they lyophilize. They do that. It's part of the process. So that's why when they tell me they're fragile, me I always think, yeah, but you know, no. So one thing is the accuracy, because you know once it's dissolved, it's so. Each half ml will have exactly the same quantity. So each vial will have exactly 5-10 milligram. It's very precise. And two, that's the last step to for the purity control, because once we just before we put them in vials, we filter them again in a 22 micron filter.
Mm-hmm.
So this way it... you know, we're sure, and for thereafter, it's all closed circuit. Nothing can go in anymore.
Right.
So that's why it's done, because otherwise it could be just powder in the vial, and that would be good. But then you lose precision. and you skip a step in terms of sterility.
Right. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about fillers, mannitol, things like that, and why the industry even uses that stuff. What's the purpose for? CanLabSciences.com is the website if you want to go check it out. They have a great array of peptides there. And being in Canada, that means that you can get this stuff. We have a lot of listeners in Canada. And here's your source as well in Canada. So we're going to take one quick commercial break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio. Every day, there's a new wellness trend. Eat that. Do this. Avoid those. How do you know where to start or who to trust? Inside Tracker helps you cut through the noise by analyzing your blood, your DNA, your lifestyle, and your fitness tracker to provide you with a science-backed, trackable action plan on how to live, age, and perform better. Personalized one-size-fits-one recommendations to help you optimize you. For a limited time, Inside Tracker is offering Superhuman Radio listeners 25% off the entire store. Go to shrnetwork.biz/InsideTracker, InsideTracker, to save 25% off. Change begins on the inside.
Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000, or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to redcon1.com. That's R-E-D-C-O-N, the number one.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
Remember those rectangular toaster pastries you used to love when you were a kid? Well, Legendary Foods has just made them better. The new cake-style tasty pastry is like nothing you've ever had before. With 20 grams of high-quality protein and less than 1 gram of sugar, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to shrnetwork.biz/legendary and use the code SHR10 to save 10% off your purchase of tasty pastries. Now available in cookies and cream, red velvet cake, birthday cake, blueberry, strawberry, brown sugar cinnamon, and hot fudge sundae. Go to shrnetwork.biz/legendary and use code SHR10 today. Peptide. Attention meat lovers. I've discovered a snack with just two ingredients, meat and salt. That is so tender and delicious, you almost can't believe it. That's right. No soy, sugar, or other crap. Our partner, Carnivore Snacks, nailed it with these mouth-watering snacks. They have a variety, too. Ribeye, pork loin, leg of lamb, and more, all sourced here in the USA from regenerative farms. Claim your superhuman offer from Carnivore Snacks today at shrnetwork.biz/snacks. That's S-N-A-X. Use the code superhuman for 15% off your first order, plus a free 2-ounce pork loin. I need to share with you all a revolutionary new wearable technology called HapVee. HapVee allows you to enjoy the effects of caffeine, alcohol, nicotine, melatonin, and muscle relaxants without actually ingesting anything. Yes, really. They figured out the unique magnetic signature of each of these molecules and recorded them. Just put the HapVee on, choose the signal you want, and it starts projecting the magnetic signature of that molecule that you choose, like coffee for feeling alert. Go to HapVee.com/SHR. That's HAPVEE. .com/SHR to learn more and unlock an $80 discount exclusively for the Superhuman Radio listeners.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. So, it's funny, you know, after buying peptides literally for, you know, 15, 16 years, occasionally they have that little wafer, beautiful puck, a beautiful white powder puck at the bottom. And, yeah, and mostly growth hormone comes that way, just for the record. But then there's the occasional obscure peptide that looks like a little rock at the bottom, you know, or maybe a dusting of powder. And you look at it and you go, what the hell? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and what, it splashes, what? And it looks ugly, right?
Yeah. So why do they use fillers and mannitol to create that puck? Is it just so that the customer feels like they're getting something?
Aesthetic.
Yeah.
Even the most hardcore researcher, you know, in lab working with mice and rats, they really like to see their little cake at the bottom, which is no indication at all of the quality of what's mixed with the mannitol. It just, it looks good. It doesn't increase stability. It doesn't, increase nothing. Except mannitol. And at the beginning, we were making all of our peptides with mannitol because it was common practice. But then it turns out that some people are, they have an immediate reaction to mannitol. There is even a study that was published about that. It's a minority, but it's there, and people were, talking about that, or I react to mannitol, so bang, we decided to just make most of our peptides without mannitol. For the first 2-3 weeks, I would get like 20-30 emails per day, to explain that what I'm saying now, phone calls, but not people, they know, and it's really not a problem. It works the same. It just doesn't look good anymore. But it doesn't add anything to the product except looking good.
Well, and I'll tell you a story. I won't mention any names, but back in the day, a famous bodybuilder got arrested for selling growth hormone. Mm-hmm. However, when the DEA tested the growth hormone, they said there was no growth hormone. It was all mannitol.
Mannitol.
So he got hit also with a charge for, like, I don't know what the charge is called, but when you sell a drug and it's not that drug, that's a federal offense. If you sell somebody an aspirin and it's not aspirin, that's a federal offense. So he not only got arrested for illegally dealing growth hormone, but he also got arrested for dealing bunk growth hormone, because all it was mannitol. That's all it was, just a little wafer of mannitol, nothing else.
And that's that's another thing. You cannot compare. You know, visually, yeah, it's very small, but well, I'm sure it was coming from, you know, about growth hormone from China. A friend of mine who used to deal with growth hormone from China like over 20 years ago, he told me that for the first 6 months, the one he was getting from China in little vial was great. Then what they didn't know in China is he would have the product analyzed. Then he started to receive other vials, and I don't remember, but there was no more growth hormone in them, but there was a drug that produced the carpal tunnel inflammation, and which is a lot cheaper. And, you know, many times that's an indicator. You know, you start to have carpal tunnel inflammation, you say, oh, it's good growth hormone.
Right, right.
Well, so they would get that effect, and
that's terrible. That's terrible.
Chinese are known for that. If they can't pass a fast one on you, they will. Like that study that came out from Scandinavia on melanotan, they bought from 15 different vendors on the internet, and they analyzed all the 15 vials. And purity was variable. It wasn't bad. But they were all sold as 10 milligrams. But systematically, they all contained 5 milligrams. Mm. So you were paying for 10, but getting 5. Mm-hmm. But what happened? You use it where you live. After that many days, you start to see the tanning. The guy used it in Germany. You know, everybody would get the same effect. So that became the standard. And I saw that happen with our melanotan. I got a few people that got really sick.
Of course, it was much stronger. Right.
Because now they were using the full dosage,
right, right,
versus underdosed. So you know, I have nothing against Chinese people, but commercially they have very twisted practices.
Yeah.
So
it's a cultural thing to get over. It's like the Middle East too. They want to haggle. They want to get over. They feel good if they got over on you. So it's a cultural thing. So Jonathan Lawson says, that he's type 1 diabetic and was curious about using RA-290 for healing neuropathy. And how can I use GH secretagogue? What do you think about ART? I got to be honest. RA-290 was a big letdown for a lot of people.
Didn't pan out to be I know why. It was pushed a lot by one company. and that's all.
I pushed it. I was the one who promoted it and pushed it. And
no, I remember it. Yeah. It was a beautiful podcast.
Yeah.
It's not you. It's you got the, you trusted where the information came from.
Well, the information came from a company that owns the patent on it. And they're the ones who did the original research. There's some place in the Northeast.
Doctors who had amazing results.
Yeah. Right?
But it's very specific. It doesn't, me for a while, I thought, oh, that's great. You know, I was hoping actually, you know, when you grow older, you lose strength. But strength is modulated by two things. The muscle size, you know, the cross section, it's that simple. And the neural activation.
Right.
And as you grow older, you lose neural activation. So you have, let's say you had 100 nerves going to one muscle when you're 20. When you're 60, maybe you have 60 nerves, but they spread out. That's why when you look at older people, they still can walk, they still can do things, but they cannot fine-tune their movements anymore like when you were 20 because that of that more spread out, less nerve thing. And me, I was hoping that peptide would solve that.
Right. I think the real magic between with ARA-290 is actually not for the nervous system, but for the microvasculature of the body. This is I suspect that now.
And with diabetes, that condition, I think that's what it was intended for.
And as far as growth hormone secretagogues go, if you're getting legit growth hormone secretagogues, it's going to increase IGF-1, which means that you'd probably end up needing less insulin. So you got to be careful with growth hormone secretagogues if you're type 1 diabetic, because make sure you have plenty of fast-acting carbohydrates around as you dial in your dose. That's all I'll say about that. Charles Dawson raises a good question. Sometimes I get vials that are vacuum sealed and sometimes I don't. Does the vacuum seal indicate anything?
No, because when we had the small lyophilizer, they were not vacuum sealed. That's to prevent air to get in contact. So to avoid oxidation if you are to keep them for a long time. So there are two ways to do that. It's vacuum seal where you pull out the air, and that's done with the bigger lyophilizer. Which we got now. So all the new vials you're going to get from us, you know, you put the syringe, it's going to just suck in the water.
Right.
What we were doing before is before closing the vials, we would flush with nitrogen.
Oh.
To flush out the oxygen.
To push out. So the nitrogen is in there then.
Exactly. So there is no vacuum, but it's still oxygen protected. Yeah.
Let's see here. A couple questions here. Interesting comments about injection sites. Cody Merley says, I've been using thymosin beta 4 and CJC 1295 to recover from surgery, and no matter where I pin it, I feel it almost instantly. Should anything be done different? No. You obviously didn't hear the beginning of the show, because that's the whole thing we said. The site injection is nonsense. Because you feel it in seconds after you inject it. It's going through your whole body. It's getting into your bloodstream, and it's going everywhere.
And it's water dissolved, so it spreads out. Look, sub-Q, it reaches the bloodstream, depending if you hit the fat or in between 30 seconds and a minute. Now, if you hit the muscle or do intramuscular, 15, 20 seconds. It's in your bloodstream. So now the time it takes to go around, less than a minute. It's all over the place.
Yeah, and Scott Lawless said, thanks for doing this show. It's going to be a podcast for people who are interested in peptides. Really, this is a podcast. There's so much misinformation. So the reason I wanted to do this podcast was selfish. I did a bunch of DIY videos on YouTube about making your own intranasal. And inevitably, I always get 3 dozen people who tell me, oh, you put the water into the BPC too fast. You destroyed it all. And instead of answering each one individually, I thought, you know, let me just do a show, because the problem, and it's not the people's problem. It's the so-called experts out there who make statements like they absolutely know and they don't. And this is typical of a new a category of science. It is. I mean, you know, we used to give people mercury for syphilis. We know that doesn't work anymore. And if anything, mercury will kill you. So, you know, that's why they call it practicing medicine. Because every day we're practicing to learn and get better. So.
And biohacking, that's how you learn things, but by doing it yourself. Probably those people, they didn't do it. They wouldn't know. There is that trend I've seen now in many groups I'm in, where, you know, you get those guys, they read a bunch of articles, and suddenly they start to opinate on things. And I mean, it's good. The reading is good. I do a lot of reading. But first, not everything is in studies yet.
Right.
So first, if you base everything on study, you know, the late Charles Poliquin.
If you base everything on studies, ARA 290 would have been a godsend for millions and millions of people. It wasn't.
Know, Charles Poliquin used to say, if I wait for a study to prove that what I'm doing is good, a lot of Olympics will have passed by. At one point, you have to, it's called educated guess, you know, from your background, from your experience.
Connecting dots, you connect dots.
Connecting dots. And people, they don't connect dots anymore. They just, what's in the study? And I came to realize people don't read the studies.
They just read the abstract. They read the abstract, and that's it.
And the abstract is the publicity of the study. They only give you the good things, not the details. Because I've been criticized a lot about my sometime high dosages for some peptides. But if you just go back at the study and look at the dosages that were used and convert it to human, I'm right on the dot.
Right.
You know, I didn't make it up. I looked at a study, I convert. It's like TB4, 5, 10 milligrams a day if you have a neurodegenerative disease.
Right.
Not 300 microgram. That's another game.
Right.
And they just don't read it and then connect the dots. And that's the best way to connect the dots. It's through practice.
No, I agree.
This
question is not necessarily about peptides, but one of the things that became popular around 2008, 2009 was injectable amino acids, which I scoffed at. I thought, I'm going to eat a 96-ounce steak. I'm going to get so much amino acids. Why do I want to inject these 4 milligrams of essential amino acids? What do you think about the injectable amino acids? Is there anything to that?
It was a cover up. You know how the NAD Plus started? I'm sure you do. Like over 20 years ago, there is this guy. He had a clinic and he was doing NAD Plus treatments, but he wouldn't disclose what he would put in it, and he would call it amino acid treatments, and he would have great results. Until one day, probably somebody took some, analyzed, and said, oh, it's NAD+. And it blew up, and now everybody's doing it. Amino acid treatments. Well, we know that some amino acids, like, the old growth hormone secretagogue that, you know, back in the 80s we would use.
Ornithine, glycine,
So maybe some at high dosages have specific action, you'll see. So they have a place. But as a general thing, just to get amino acids for the sake of it, just take amino acid orally. They will be absorbed.
You
know?
Scott Lawless says there's definitely a lot of bro science and experts out there. I won't name names, but one of the most popular BPC articles has all the bro science about peptide fragility. And so most people read that. Yes. And actually, some of the experts that I've had on this show turned out not to really, you know, when no one knows anything about a subject, you can step up and bullshit your way into being an expert because nobody can challenge you. Nobody knows. If you say with complete confidence, you know, thymosin alpha 1, once you're reconstituted, you got to inject it within 3 hours or it goes bad. No one tested it. No one's going to call you on it. That's what's happened in peptides.
And on the internet, I'm thinking Reddit. You know, they have a thing. It's only for peptides. There are people that have amazingly good points. And actually, I'm about to write a little thing about that. And the guy saw that. But for example, this guy, I cannot cite him or, you know, give him credit because it's, I don't know, Joe Blow 299.
Right.
No, who's that guy? But it's brilliant what he came up with.
Right, right.
But by the same token, you have total idiot. I had a guy on Reddit that said he was working for CanLab. You know?
And, he's not working for CanLab.
No, no, he's not.
Right.
So that's why I don't interact on Reddit, because I like to know who I interact with.
Right.
So not, yeah, I have a PhD, I have three PhD and all that. And it's like, yeah, sure. But you won't give your name. It's, as you said, it's easy. And you read, and people are very susceptible to degrees and...
yeah, that's a big deal right there. If you have any letters after your name, people will believe you before they believe someone who clearly has a better understanding of the science than you do, just because of that. And, you know, that has to stop. There are a lot of people who have immersed themselves in science, in specific areas of science, for whatever reason. They're fighting a disease, a relative is fighting a disease, and they've read all this stuff. You know, doctors, by and large, are not born with any special qualities. No. They do everything like everybody else does, but they go to medical school, which means that they're exposed to certain knowledge and books and classes. Well, if you are an autodidact, if you can teach yourself and you expose yourself to all that same information, you can be smarter than that doctor, but you just don't have a degree.
Exactly. I see that a lot. That's not, you know, bro science. I'm not against, I love bro science because, again, we come from the same era. If it wasn't for bro science, a lot of things wouldn't be here today.
That's right.
You know, people trying things, but eventually testing it, and it's empirical science, it's called, you know, out of experience, not yes. out of actual research. But some people, they push it too much, they extrapolate too much things. So I think the best, it's kind of a mix of both. A bit of bro science, a bit of actual science. You get the best out of both, and then you come up with good things.
My frustration is that in all the peptide Facebook pages, I don't engage anymore, just because there's plenty of people that'll answer the rudimentary questions. They don't need me. I know that you give a lot of support, but what frustrates me is the questions like, what peptide is good for weight loss? Well, why don't you start with diet first before you start turning to peptide? You know, what peptide, and I jokingly posted one day, what peptide is good for discipline? Because I don't have any discipline. It's like peptides aren't going to cure everything, folks. They're just not.
Let me tell you something. Just keep an eye on me. The day I get really skinny really fast, that's because a peptide that makes you lose weight
you've discovered.
Was discovered.
Right.
If there was one, I would be thinking.
Yeah, you would know about it.
I tried them all.
That's a good one. Listen, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be on the show today. Let me just promote your website one more time. So the website is canlabsciences.com. You can go there. They got lots of great peptides there. They ship. You ship all over the world, right?
Yeah, well, some countries, no. I ship, but will it get in? But in the U.S., it's really no problem. Some glitches sometimes, but it's very minimal. Europe, some countries, Asia, Middle East, South America, no. Mexico down, they're very tight. But the U.S., no problem. Europe, half the countries. But I'm working on that. I'm having a distributor there soon. And if I may, if people are interested, I'm working right now developing, you know, for education, doctors and everybody who's interested, what we call the International Peptide Academy. where we'll be giving courses and information and mastermind and, you know, the whole shebang. But most important, what we want to, we're going to hook up with a more general academy of medicine that is will open up in Switzerland. So we'll be like the peptide section of that academy. So we'll really be international.
Right. 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 Because let's be clear about something. The International Peptide Society that we promoted on this show for a couple of years has pretty much fizzled out. They really didn't. They weren't about the science. There was a lot of egos involved, and egos always destroy things. And so the International Peptide Society pretty much has gone by the wayside. I don't think they're doing anything new, and definitely not doing anything exciting. With that being said, you guys are picking up the ball. You're going, hey, there's a white space here.
And a bit further, because I've been to the IPS conferences and others, and what we've noticed, I'm doing that with Dr. Cook, Matt Cook in California.
And we'll get him on the show. You're going to help arrange to get him on the show.
The guy is amazingly good. Is the first one I've saw done epidural with peptides. Mm-hmm. That's and with ridiculously amazing results. We want people who come, more practitioners and doctors in that case, and we didn't see that before. Not to learn a bunch of theoretical stuff, and Monday morning they get back to their practice and they don't know what to do.
They can't do anything with what they just learned, right?
No. So we want them Monday morning, not everything, but maybe for a condition or two. They see those clients who have that condition and they say, oh, I know what to do with him. And over time with more conferences, other conditions, so give them the tools to be able to apply those therapies, not just know theoretically that they exist, but really give them the tools to apply them. That's what we want to bring in with that.
Is that Dr. Matt Cook who's doing the epidurals and peptides?
Yeah.
Okay, so there you go, Scott. It's Dr. Matt Cook. We're going to get him on the show. We're going to get him on the show. Matt Cook, I think, California. Yeah. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, that's
the man. We'll get him on the show. Yeah, we need some more resources for peptides because the people that were resources are busy chasing fame.
That's so. The thing, and I'm starting to gather good doctors that are I won't say experimenting, but pushing the envelope,
right?
You know, not just taking those basic dosages and apply them to everybody. They say, okay, if I mix this one with this one, and they try things because medicine, it's as much a science as it's an art,
right? Right.
You know, don't think it's all written.
See, and big pharma and allopathic medicine's contribution to this discussion is that they turned it into not an art. They
exactly.
said everybody gets this dose, everybody gets this pill for that, everybody gets this, because that's where the billions are made. If you can give everybody the same thing, then you just have to make one product, one dose, and then everybody.
But
individuality plays a role in everything from diet to sleep to activity to education and, of course, medicine. And, of course, medicine.
There you go.
Jean, thanks for being here today, brother.
Hey, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
Let me know when the new Peptide Academy starts so we can start promoting
it. The website domain exists. It's internationalpeptideacademy.com. And we got both, peptide with an S or without an S. So right now, if you go, it will just say nothing. But hopefully in a couple of weeks, we'll start to put content. We want to start giving conferences in at the end of September, beginning of October, and they will be both in person and streaming. So wherever you live, you could assist. And we're working really hard right now to put that to have it going.
Do you see the events happening in Canada? Will they happen here or both?
Eventually, and again, to keep that international thing, and once things, you know, we want to do with that academy in Switzerland, the same thing, you know, IPS wasn't all bad. You know, they did very good things. You know, that kind of collaboration they had with A4M, which was more global medical thing, but they would be like in more for the peptides. So when that academy in Switzerland will be going and running, then yeah, we'll give conferences in Switzerland. You know, we want to spread out and, of course, in the Caribbean in the winter time.
Yeah. You just want to go lay. You just want to go lay on the beach. That's all you
yeah,
want.
Yeah. No.
No. Take. Invite me. I want to lay on the beach.
Of course.
I want to lay on the beach. I just want to lay on the beach.
But you know, so to make it nice at the same time. But mostly at the beginning, it's going to be either Florida or California.
Good. I'm close
East
to Florida.
Coast, West Coast, yeah, you know, good. Alternate.
Good.
And then we'll start to move around a bit more.
Well, just keep me in mind, and we'll start promoting it on the show when the time comes, okay?
Okay, nice.
All right, thank you. Thanks for being here, and thanks for everybody who watched and listened. Please share this show. Everybody's so interested in peptides. We need to erase some of the misinformation, like, oh, you damaged your BPC because you put the water in too fast. Nah, not happening. And fidelity. I mean, peptides exist in your bloodstream right now. They all get along just fine. Why not in that syringe? So, all right, look, we'll see everybody with more Supreme Radio tomorrow. Thanks for being here today.